Blog Talk Radio. To Hooray for the Moon by John D. Graham. Well, hello everyone, I'm Lauren Leibowitz and welcome to Blog Talk Radio and How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes. It's Thursday, April 8th, and once again we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, as I do every Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time. We love hearing from you. Boy, do we love hearing from you. So please, please join us to listen in or ask questions by dialing 347-857-2710. We are here live until 3:45 p.m. Pacific time. Again, that those 10 little digits are 347-857-2710. I hope you will either listen, call in to listen, or ask my guest or I a question, or tell us a joke. Can always use a laugh or two. Well, I hope you're ready because I need you to get your crayons, acrylics, or watercolors, because today we are going against the mainstream and coloring outside the lines. Doesn't that sound freeing? I think so. It sounds great. As a child, my guest scoffed at the idea of coloring inside the lines, and that attitude is prevalent in his work today. He's an artist and a little bit of a rebel, and we love that. We love the rebel. So please welcome Noah M. Hurt. Hi, Noah.
How are you, Lauren?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good, thank you.
No, really, are you really very good?
Yeah, I've just been kind of rocking out to the music you guys have going in the background and everything while I was on hold.
I know, it's nice, huh? I thought since, you know, you were an artist with a little dash of rebel, that a little rock and roll-esque music would be appropriate for an opening.
Nothing like a little funk on the phone.
That's right, we're doing funk on the phone. I love it. I might have to borrow that. Little funk on the phone. Well, you know, I find it very interesting your coloring inside the lines comment, because I think, like most of us as kids, when we did color, our parents told us to stay within the lines, that if you were caught coloring outside those lines, that you just didn't know how to color properly.
Yeah, there's my mother once showed me this actual this colored drawing that I did as a child, and it was, you know, I don't know how old I was when I saw it, but when she showed it to me, I was kind of blown away by it. And there was no coloring inside the lines whatsoever, but I thought this thing was like the most beautiful thing that, you know, a 3-year-old or a 4-year-old could actually do this. I don't know how old it was when I did it, but that's something that has actually stayed in my mind, you know, my whole life.
What does that comment mean to you?
I think that's just what it is. Like you said, when you're a child and you're told you have to color inside the lines, you know what I mean? It's just that I think it's sort of a mindset that kind of you're taught to do your entire life, you know, whether it be, you know, job or whatever you're into or doing.
So to do what's normal, to do what society says you should do, or you have to follow the rules. Not to say that one shouldn't follow the rules, but you can follow the rules in a creative way also.
Yeah, but I think as long as you realize that, it's fine. But you also have to, you know, take a lot of chances in life to obviously break those rules, which you know, artists and musicians or whatever have been doing for you know, years and years, and breaking through and trying, you know, trying new things. And that's kind of what, you know, society, I think, needs and wants. They're always looking for something new and fresh.
So do you think you're a rule breaker?
Yeah, I think, yeah, it's just, I mean, growing up, yeah, I think it's something that I've always sort of enjoyed, which might sound bad.
you're
a bit of a hellion growing up.
But that's what a lot of young people do. They push the buttons, and you see how far your parents go.
For sure. I mean, you know, it has a lot, obviously, to do where you're growing up and you know, the household, and, you know, there's the whole teenage angst thing going on, and I think once you sort of have that in your veins, it's always still in there. It's just a little more refined, I think, and you have a little more control over it. So I think that's kind of where, for me, art has been sort of that outlet for it. And obviously now that I'm a lot older, I'm not out vandalizing and doing whatever kids do. But it's just sort of still holds true in my work.
So how did you get started painting?
I had just been doing art ever since I was young, ever since I remember. You know, I would get together with, like, friends, and we would just draw these, like, random pictures. And, you know, some of them, I'm sure, were quite stupid at the time. And art is just something that's always sort of been in my blood. And I remember being in school. I hated junior high. I hated elementary, high school. I hated the whole thing. I never understood why I was there. The only classes that I really, really enjoyed and related to was art and literature for some reason. And I just remember being in art class, and that was, like, the one class where, you know, I was just by myself, and, you know, I didn't want to be bothered, and this is it for me. And then so I just kind of, but I never had, like, the inkling to say I'm going to be famous because of this, or I want to get paid doing this for the rest of my life and make a lot of money. And you know, then there was actually a big chunk of my life where I didn't do art at all for a while, and then I sort of got back into it, and you know, it's been sort of full force ever since.
What made you stop something that it sounds as if it was quite important to you?
I don't really know why. I think what happened was I have a bachelor's in fine arts, and my major was computer animation and design. And I remember as soon as I graduated school, I moved away on my own to a bigger city, I guess, compared to where I grew up. And so I went out and did the routine. You have your resume and whatever, and you'd go to these different places, and you give them resume and see if they want you. And I think I tried for like a week, to be honest, and it didn't work out. And I got so frustrated and angry that I just kind of like threw it all out the window. And then I actually moved to Japan, and I lived there for about 5 years. And
wow,
I think
you were
that was
really angry. you moved out of the United States.
I know. I think that's what it was. The interest in Japan just sort of snowballed, and I wanted something different than – I was born and raised in Ohio. So I think at the time, being in Ohio, it's a good state. It's sort of plain. So I wanted something other than what I felt this country had to offer. But obviously, these are the eyes of somebody living in Ohio. So Japan obviously seemed like an entirely different culture, and that really appealed to me. So then I went over there. And like I said, lived for 5 years, and then I started doing acting over there, and I sort of pursued that for a little while.
And your artwork is so interesting and diverse. Has your experience in your early years of living in Japan affected the style of your art?
I want to say yes. I don't know if it's so much Japan. I'd rather say that I think living in Japan, and then I also lived in New York for a couple of years after that. And I think that whole like 7 or 8 years experience obviously changes anybody. So when you paint or when you do your form of art, whatever it may be, your lifestyle and who you are is obviously going to be reflected in your work. So in a sense, yes, I do think, you know, being over in Japan and then living in New York does have a profound effect on my work. That's not to say that, like, you look at my work and think, oh, there's a little bit of Japan in there. You know, that's kind of rare. I will have one painting that I do write in Japanese on some of it, but it's not, like, you know, of major importance to me to reflect living in Japan in my work. But there is a huge difference from when I painted before living in Japan, and then, you know, today. There's a huge difference in style and technique and things like that, and I'm sure that does have a lot to, you know, giving art a break, in a sense, and then, you know, living my life the way I wanted to and doing what I did, and now it's changed everything completely.
Well, you know, when you look at some of the great artists of the world, I'll mention Picasso, just because he had so many different periods. You know,
mm-hmm.
like his blue
mm-hmm.
period, and for those listeners that aren't too familiar with Picasso's work, that the things that he painted while he was in his blue period were blue. And
yeah.
depending on what woman, he had many lovers, and so depending on what woman he was with,
mm-hmm.
similar to what you're saying, is your life experiences can't help but reflect in your work.
Yeah. Yeah, I really think a person's lifestyle has a lot to do with how they work, and I think a lot of artists don't let that happen. I feel like a lot of artists cut themselves off short, and I don't know if they're trying to achieve something, but I feel like a lot of artists aren't living their life enough to its fullest extent, which is obviously going to show in their work, like I said earlier.
Well, you wrote that to know you is to know your art. So, what can I learn about you from your art that I don't know?
That's a tough one. I think what I mean by that is obviously if you look at the work, it doesn't always. I think there's a saying like the artist that makes the work or the work that makes the artist? I don't know if I made that up or what. But
I don't know. I think it's probably which came first, the chicken or the egg.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, a lot of people they look at the art and they don't realize the little nuances and things like that actually come from the artists that are put into the painting. I know a lot of my paintings start out with like an idea or whatever started that work, and then I try to pull a lot of things from my surroundings, my environment, and my life into the painting, however minute they may be. And, which means it's like reading a book about me or something like that, not to sound too cliche, but.
So where do you get your inspiration?
I think, honestly, like for me, each painting is different. It might be one is just an image that sort of came to my mind, and then I kind of worked around that. Or the next one might be a color pattern that I really liked, and then I wanted to use that somehow. And then another one might be I just got tired of trying to find an idea, so I just start slapping down paint and work from that. So it's always so each painting is sort of a constant process of I don't know where it's going to go, and I don't know how it's going to end and things like that.
Yes, I have your collection in front of me, and you're right, they are all so different. There doesn't seem to be one particular theme.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you took I don't know, Mondrian, an abstract artist, if you saw a square, a geometrical shape, mm-hmm. in any form with bright colors, you would know that that's his. I mean, you have a style from, let's say, your Small Fortune to The Fall of Mankind.
Mm-hmm.
I sense that there's a message there. What was your message behind the making of Fall of Mankind?
Fall of Mankind is actually a work I did for a client. There's two on there that I did for that same client. There's that, and there's the one untitled. It's like a Buddha, and she originally wanted me to do this big Buddha thing because she's Asian, so she felt that was sort of appropriate for whatever reason. And I did that because that's normally not my style. It's normally not something I would do for myself. So I did that for her, sort of like promising that she would use me again for Inside the House, which was more the work that I wanted to do. So actually, Fall of Mankind was just a rough sketch that I did one day based on my cell phone because I had nothing else to do, so I did that. And so I showed her all these sketches, and she picked that one for some reason. And that one's actually based on my cell phone. So when I come up with a lot of times when I come up with a title, it's just something that I might think of during the process of the painting, and I think that kind of came up. I don't even remember why. It might be because cell phones could be or represent the technology, the end of mankind or something to that effect. You know what I mean?
About the end of it's interesting because on the canvas there is some writing across the bottom of the canvas. You write, "Please hang up and dial again," and then perpendicular to that you have the word send and an OK icon and then the end. So I think it's a very interesting conversation. I mean, this is a very interesting piece now that you're telling me its origin.
Yeah.
About today's technology and how we use it and how it affects us in relationships.
Yeah, and I think that, now that you know the story, it probably does help. But I think even for me, like I said, towards the end of finishing the painting, it kind of it all ties in and it all sort of becomes clear and it does make sense. Even to me, like halfway through, I didn't really plan that and it just, kind of came into fruition, I guess.
So it sounds like you allow your artistic genius to come through. You don't, quote unquote, control it. So perhaps a genesis of an idea you have, but when that painting is finished, perhaps the genesis of the idea is not necessarily what that comes out at the end. So you just, you just paint freely.
Yeah, I try to paint as freely as possible. You know, and I've done some, I think there was one on there titled Populist Hope, which is one that I just started. And I didn't even know where it was going to go. I didn't have any idea. I think the only clear thing I had was that I wanted to use the color pink on that one. And I don't know if you can see that in front of you. And then what I intended to actually do was like a huge outline of a drawing of like an airplane or something. And then I remember I told somebody that I was going to do that, and there was like a pause in the conversation. And I thought, maybe that does sound a little ridiculous, because who's going to want to look at an airplane? I don't know. And then it ended up being this like freeway system that's based on, I think, the 10 and the 110 in downtown L.A.
I was going to say, it does look like an interchange, a freeway interchange.
Yeah, that's kind of what that was based on. So, you know, not that I'm obsessed with, you know, freeways or highways or anything like that.
You can be honest here. We're alone. You can tell me.
I'm that one guy you see at the side of the road. Pick me up, please.
That's him. That's him. But I am very much interested in the story behind the Tangled piece. It's one of the only black and white canvases you have, besides the one we were just talking about the telephone, where there is a man and a woman embraced.
That, there's a story behind that. I think it was me actually just kind of, that was one of the things that sort of came up when I was getting back into the swing of things as far as painting goes. And I had been doing a lot of sketches and just kind of drawing and things like that. And I was going to actually do this series, this Tangled series of different, you know, I guess, like drawings of men and women together, tangled. And it's still a cool idea. I just think I sort of abandoned it. And I think that one was oil and acrylic. I don't remember. And like I said, it was just kind of a byproduct of getting back into the swing of things. And I do like it. I would actually, there might be a day when I kind of, you know, revert back to that and get back into the, you know, the whole Tangled series again. But I mean, I do like it. It's different, you know.
Yeah.
But there's no big story like it was me and a woman. There's no
Jew. I was searching for the dirt. I want the dirt.
There's no. There was no story about me and a woman. You know, unfortunately. Maybe
oh,
next
come
time.
On.
there might have been a woman at the time, but you know, when I was doing that, I wasn't thinking about it. It could be something like, you know, often, you know, nudes are very appealing to me, and I do photography as well. And lately, I've thought about maybe shooting some nudes and things like that. You know, if I had the time, I would definitely do that. But that's, you know, finding the nudes and finding people that would be into that, it would just be very time consuming, I think. But I think. It's kind of something as a man, and when you put a man and photography together, that, you know, something is evoked, I guess, and that sounds very interesting to me.
It does. I was just fascinated by the entanglement. I interpreted it. You know, that's the beauty about art. It's so you can objective. You have your own thoughts, and the artist has one thought, or maybe not at all, on how it came to be, and then the viewer has other ideas, and so the idea that came to mind was about the entanglement of relationships, and here this couple's entwined, so close together that they almost look like one.
Yeah, that is the idea behind that, is that actually tangle does sort of represent, you know, the relationship between a man and woman, and all these emotions can get tangled as well, and you know. And I sort of, you know, that's kind of maybe the basis of a relationship, actually. And I think that's sort of what those drawings and things like that represent.
Now, I know a lot of these are in acrylic. What other mediums do you use in your
art? I honestly prefer only acrylic. To me, I think oils are sort of outdated and unnecessary, which might be a bold statement to say, and it's going to probably upset a lot of artists. But I feel I'll even see a lot of artists that use oils in a way that oils really aren't intended. And I just think acrylics nowadays, they can do just about anything that oil can do. And I think they're a little more durable, and the drying process is so much quicker. I can't understand people that use oil, and you know, I'll hear them complain that, oh my God, I'm waiting for this to dry, and I'm waiting for this to dry, and that just irks me. But I think it's what you're taught to do in schools, because that is what the old masters used, and they were using oils for centuries or whatever, and that's kind of what you're taught to study. You're studying these artists, and you're studying how they painted, and so everybody gets it in their mind that, oh, you got to use oil still, and, you know, I mean, unless you're doing landscapes and portraitures, then to me that makes sense, but I think, honestly, the acrylic is, I guess, the way to do it nowadays.
Well, here's the whole concept of coloring inside the lines. That this is how this artist did it. So these are the rules that are handed down for other artists to follow. But you can do it any way you want.
Exactly. Yeah. Honestly, if I had my way, I would get rid of oil paints entirely and just, you know, let's keep pushing the acrylic revolution here. And
our switchboard is lighting up just because you said that. They're coming after
that's
you.
That's what I do.
That's the rebel in you coming out.
I'm the instigator. I can't help it.
That's right. You're the instigator. Well, that's great. Hey, you know what? That's great because you listen to what you want to do. It's about your creativity and what that is for you. And that's freeing. Who says you have to do what someone else does?
Yeah.
You know,
we all
kind of borrow and steal from other people in some form or another. There are only so many colors of the rainbow. But
of course.
But the way in which you do it, and it's a way for you to have your voice and express yourself. And I think that's wonderful, because otherwise you'd just be like everybody else.
Yeah, and I think that's what every artist is trying to achieve anyway, whether it's oils or acrylics.
Exactly, exactly. So what's your next project? What are you working on now?
I have ordered some supplies, and I'm sort of in between paintings right now. I'm actually just putting varnish over a few paintings right now, which is never a fun process, but, you know, it's necessary for me. The only thing I can tell you about my next piece is it's going to involve rabbits.
Okay, just stop right there.
Rabbits.
Oh, wow, my imagination just went all over the board.
More. This is an addition to the Tangled series, no?
Rabbits. Real. Now, where did you get this idea?
You know, I don't even know where the rabbits came about. I think I was just sketching one day, and for some reason, rabbits seemed right at the time. And there was sort of a sort of coloring process that I wanted to try out. And it just sort of involves, like, I guess, a layering of color. You know, it's kind of hard to describe until you see it. But, and then it's some sort of, like, a figure or something over these different shapes of color. And rabbit just kind of came to mind. So then what I also did was I rented Watership Down. I don't know if you remember that one. And I bought the novel Watership Down. I mean, I pretty much all had this painting already worked out how I wanted it to look. Just for some reason, rabbits was going berserk with rabbits. And I rented this video and got this book, and I'm going to read it and see if there's some sort of inspiration.
That's beautiful. I like that you get an idea that you don't, let's say, just have a blank canvas and sit and stare, that constantly your mind is churning for ideas. But wherever you go, you can find an idea.
Yeah, I've had so many ideas in my lifetime. It's kind of pathetic, and I wish I had, you know, two lifetimes to get all of this stuff out. It's just endless possibilities. I mean, as an artist, being an artist, I think, is there's just so many things you can do, and there's just so many individuals out there with different personalities and different mindsets. So, I mean, if everybody in the world was an artist, you know, you'd still be able to just crank out idea after idea, and it's just limitless.
But I like your attitude about that, because the title of this radio program, How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes, is about, in a sense, not being afraid to take a step in any direction to get started in whatever field or a passion that you have, to get you motivated to get started anywhere. That sometimes people make excuses for themselves. Let's say, as an artist, I don't have any idea, so I'm not going to paint. You just go ahead and varnish the blank canvas, and as you move forward, ideas come.
Yeah, but like you said, though, I do think the basis has to be passion. Whatever you do, you know, whether it's, you know, whatever your field is, actually, I think you really need that passion. Otherwise, you're just going to be fooling yourself. Because, you know, if there was ever a time in my life where I thought art was something that, you know, I wasn't sure about, or I didn't have a passion for it, then I wouldn't even attempt it. You know, that would be to say if I wanted to do something like baseball. If I had a passion for baseball, then obviously I would have grown up doing baseball, and I would love it, you know, even if I was, you know, at times not confident enough or something like that. As long as you have that passion, I think that's going to carry you through no matter what you're doing in life.
That's very true. I often ask my friends this question, and I will pose it to you. If you were given an enormous amount of money, let's say millions of dollars, to do the one thing you love the most, what would it be?
With $1 million, I think it would have to be painting. That means I would have to not worry about buying supplies for the rest of my life, I guess. That would honestly be it, yeah.
Well, so you are in the right field, because a lot of people have a job, which is an acronym for just over broke, and and when I pose that question to them, I get another answer. So obviously, and I understand sometimes you want to be an opera singer and you can't earn money as an opera singer, but sometimes people feel that they just don't do it, period, instead of you're doing it, and because it makes you happy, it fulfills you, and that's what life should be about. Yes, you have to pay your bills, but you should also do things that give you pleasure.
For sure, yeah. I think I'm actually very lucky that I do have art, because I know that's what I want to do. I know I enjoy it. You know, even if I'm the starving artist my entire life, that's fine, because, you know, I really feel like this is what I'm to do in life. I don't know if that sounds, you know, how that sounds.
That's nice. That's great. You know it. So you're already a successful artist.
Yeah, in a sense, yeah. I don't see myself doing the 9-to-5 office job. That could be me rebelling again, and this is my way of doing that.
That's right. You're 24/7. People are going to call you your commission work at all hours of the night. Where are my bunnies? I want the bunnies. Where are they?
Well, if I start seeing bunnies, that's when I got to worry.
Yeah, exactly. And so, do you do mostly commission work, throwing that in, or just whatever moves you?
I've been doing commission pieces for a little while, but I plan on doing my own show this year, so I'm kind of just sticking to my own and holding myself up in my studio and painting away. You know, I don't know when that's going to be. I'm just kind of working on my own collection to sort of, I guess, you know, throw out there onto the world. So that's what I'm doing right now. I'm not, you know, if somebody wants to do a commission piece, you know, and it's going to be decent money, so obviously, you know, I'll put down the books and, you know, go to that affair. But, you know, for right now, I'm just kind of working on my own collection and hopefully have enough.
Well, for those of listeners, let's direct them to your website, so at least while we're on the air here, they can take a look at the fabulous work that you do, and they can go to www.emhurt.com, and they can see your entire collection, and they can also, you have your email address there, so they can contact you if they're interested in buying your artwork, and I'm assuming that these pieces are for sale.
Most of them, yeah. Some of them I don't even have anymore. There's a lot of like paintings and stuff that I've done out there that are floating somewhere in the world, and, you know, some
you're
of those
in the
pieces
world
on there.
Somewhere?
Yeah, who knows?
You're lost.
Yeah, exactly. You never know. And then some of those are our clients already own, so.
Oh, that's great. So who are there any artists, past or present, that whose work you are so enamored by that influence you and how you want to paint and what kind of artist you want to be?
There has never been, and I doubt there ever will be. I have always I've tried to not look at other artists' work, which is impossible, I know. I've never sat down and said, this is a favorite artist of mine, this is what I want it to be. And I think the reasons are behind that because we're so easily influenced, whether we realize it or not, that I don't want to be, look at an artist's work and be influenced and try to emulate that or try to copy that anyway. I really try to make the work from as original as possible from, you know, inside me and try to make it who I am. I mean, there are some artists that I'll look at and I really love their work. I love like artists like Chuck Connelly. He was an amazing artist, but you know, he's just somebody whose work I admire. But I would never try to paint his style, because I mean his is obviously entirely different from mine. And then there was somebody I think I just stumbled upon yesterday. It was a, I think her name's Katie Lewis. She does some really cool stuff like that. But this is something I would never do. But like I said, I try not to be influenced because I try to make my work as original as possible.
So would you say you're, you know, I've been teasing you throughout this whole conversation.
Which I love about you, Lauren. I love that about you.
You love my, I tease with love. I mean, I love that you're a rebel. I love, because I consider myself somewhat similar, that I was always kind of different as a kid. I remember having a birthday party, instead of sending out the usual birthday invitations, my mother and I did an art project where we got stones, you know, flat stones, and then put the invite on a stone, and the stone went into a burlap bag, and the burlap bag had a tie on it with a note on it. It was a lot of work, but I felt, yeah, that's really cool. And no, it took a lot of time and effort and energy, and I enjoy doing that, to be a little, you know, different, another way of to express myself. So.
And I'm sure there's still one or two people that still have those stones, Lauren.
Yeah. Yes, I'm sure if I showed my face, they might be tossed in a certain direction. So.
I would have come to that party had I received those stones. Don't get me wrong.
I wish you would, but there was a question I was going to ask you about that. I guess what I'm saying is I sense from our conversation that you take pride, that's not really the right word, but you have such a strong conviction about who you are and how you want to be and you live your life. And I guess I applaud you. A lot of people tend to be tentative.
Mm-hmm.
Or living in Los Angeles, it's always about trying to be like the masses on a certain level.
Yeah.
You have to be blonde, and you know, if you're a woman, you have to be blonde and have this type of a figure. If you're a man, you have to look like this. But you are your own person, and I just think that's wonderful. And I think that you're right, and I wanted to reiterate this. It's about your upbringing, because I, too, am from the East Coast, and I think it's a different mindset than out here in on the West Coast.
It is. I mean, I'm glad I was born in Ohio, and I'm glad I was sort of raised over there, because it is a good mindset, and you know, there's some good people over there. But it's kind of the same thing. It's kind of the same cycle. Everybody over there is sort of similar. You know, nobody wants to rock the boat. And I think, you know, growing up, when you kind of realize that, and you do want to rock the boat, you want to be that one person or whatever. It's a constant battle. And then and here I am out in LA, which is, you know, stereotype central. And
Now, do you feel comfortable when you're rocking the boat, or is it uncomfortable but you feel you need to do it anyway?
I feel I need to do it constantly. I don't know what it is. It's like a blessing and a curse. It gets you in trouble. But I mean, it's not like it's things that have been done. There's so many people that have done it before me. It's not like I'm doing anything new. You know, I encourage people to do it because everybody wants to fit in and sort of be like everybody else because it's uncomfortable when you're not. So I think really you have to rock the boat in a sense and change things up, because that's deep down what everybody is looking for. I think they're always looking for that new thing, that something that's different. You know, everybody's out there, they're on like a feeding frenzy for it, even if they look the same.
Right. Well, nobody wants to be the first. Once you are the first, I liken it to, I don't know if you're familiar with, there's this yogurt company, Pinkberry. Are you familiar?
Pinkberry, yeah.
And
yes.
Two Korean college students from USC came up with this business plan and opened this store in Koreatown, I believe, I don't know, a few years ago. And boom, it was quite successful, and they opened several other locations. Well, now you see other yogurt companies that are very similar. So here was somebody that was a leader like yourself that did something so completely different. And obviously their business plan worked because other people followed suit. So you're a leader. I like it that you're the rebel leader, because you stand on your own convictions and do what you feel you need to do. And whether people accept it or not, it doesn't matter to you.
Yeah, but shame on those other yogurt places for jumping on the bandwagon.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's everybody wants that's LA, I think. Everybody says, "Oh, here's something that's a money-making idea. I don't need to come up with something on my own. I'm just going to take it and run with it."
Yeah, that's profit.
Well, yeah, you know, it's greed, and I think that's what has gotten this country into a lot of difficulty is constantly thinking about the bottom dollar. You know, I think...
For sure, yeah.
You're pretty sure. You heard it
but
here?
Yeah, you're right. And I think that a lot of things is what people don't have, they lose their passion on what they're trying to do because they... You know, they grow up and they think, I've got to make money. I've got to be able to provide for a family and things like that. So I've got to have a secure income. And then when they do that, they end up getting these 9-to-5 jobs and things like that. Or they jump on the yogurt bandwagon or whatever just for the sake of money. You know, these probably two college girls, I mean, I'm sure in the back of their mind they said this could be a good business and we can probably be successful. But I'm sure at least one of them had some passion in getting this product out there or something like that. Hopefully they did. You know, I don't know. But, you know, monetary gain seems to really diminish everybody's passion and what they should be doing or what they would like to do.
Well, I think if you start with the passion and move, take one step at a time, and different opportunities will present themselves. And I truly believe that monetary aspect will be at the end.
For sure. Yeah, I think you're definitely right there. I mean, I really can't say it any better. I mean, I know that I have passion for painting things like that. There's nothing for me. There's nothing like it, you know. And I'm hoping, like I said, after I do a show this year, I'm really hoping things kind of work out for me. And you know, if somebody wants to buy all of my work, I'm certainly not going to turn them down because that's going to obviously fund more artwork for myself and or whatever.
More materials.
Exactly, and these things are expensive nowadays.
I know. The art world is very expensive, and as you know, it's unfortunate with today's economy, and especially in the L.A. Unified School District, art is probably one of the programs that is going to be cut, and that really breaks my heart because I think it's an outlet. It's a way for young people to express themselves, and it's important as far as any other academic subject in school.
True, but I will tell all those budding artists out there and young kids trying to do art that you don't need to go to school for it. It's definitely something, like I said, I went to college for it, and I honestly wish that I never did. I went, you know, 4 years through college, and they did provide me with the space to do it and things like that. But nobody's going to be able to teach you how to really do art and how to express yourself on the canvas and things like that. They can teach you the basics and the techniques to, say, building a canvas and putting it all together and what materials to use. But from there, it's basically up to you. So, you know, it is a shame that they're gonna shut all these things down in school because, you know, that's to just go through school every day and study math and whatever else they make you do nowadays. And then art is the one thing that you can honestly sit down with and enjoy and maybe find some peace and relaxation in it. But, you know, like I said, you're gonna if you really want to do it, you can teach yourself.
Well, obviously you have a talent for it. So I think, and I don't know, most people, I know I can't even say most people, but, you know, what is art? You know, that's an ambiguous question. You know what? There was a play called Art. I don't know if you saw it. This was maybe 20 years ago, and this couple bought a painting, and it was just a white canvas. They brought it home. They were so proud of it. They paid $1 million for it, and they said this was art. And they put it on the wall. And they were so proud that they invited another couple over, and they had cocktails, and they said, look at what we purchased. This is it. They removed the covering, and there was the blank canvas. And so the entire play was about what is art? Exactly.
Did the play answer the question? I think I'm waiting for the answer, too.
There really is no answer. It's because it's so... subjective. It's what you like, and I don't know who's to say all these unfortunate artists that have been creative and have died early deaths, and then their work becomes hot. I mean, they could have while they were living, they probably had. Oh yeah, that's I like that. I can't think of the Basquiat. I don't know if you there was an exhibit in MoCA. He's very interesting with his background in I think Haiti, and one parent is Haitian, and I think the other parent is from Brooklyn or some form of New York, and his artwork is so colorful, and there's emotion in it. But if he didn't die an early death, do you think his art would have been, you know, where it is? I don't want that to happen to you, Noah. You're going to be you already are successful. So.
Thank you, Lauren. I do. He had a wonderful life story as well. You know what I mean? So that just adds to his art, I think. When you look at his lifestyle and the way he lived, you can't not emulate that in your work. And he was involved. He was living on the street. I mean, there was drug use. He was, you know, tight with Warhol and things like that. So I think when you're in that group and that whole scene at the time, that's just going to carry you on. Now, if he would continue to be successful, that success being dependent on his work, it's hard to say, because some artists get stuck on a certain style and they just kind of pump out these paintings that look, you know, the same one after the other. Or they venture out into new areas that don't work, and it's almost like musicians. You know, there's so many musicians out there that are just huge that have died at an early age. You know, but who's to say, like, you know, they'd be 50 or 60 and still making great hits? It's sort of along that vein, I think. So it's really hard to say, but I think in his case, it probably did help the value of the work. And the background story behind them, I really think it kind of, you know, puts a mystique on things like that.
It does, and you know, really, what is art? It's people who deems it art.
Exactly. I think probably the artist and the viewer, yeah.
That's it. I mean, it's an art critic that says, Noah Emhert, you got to love his work, blah, blah, blah. He's this, the style, his rebel. It comes in, the lines, the color. It's fabulous. And more people talk about it, and more than you get the press. And then when there are people who see your art, they say, "Oh yeah, this is great," because you're supposed to like it, because you don't want to have a different opinion.
You mean, do I not want to have a different opinion than what the critics
are
saying?
Well, other people who, whatever, you know, you go to a museum and you see a gallery, an art showing of any artist, and you read a review about it, and you go in thinking, okay, I'm supposed to like it because this artist is this and that, and then you go and you say, you know, I don't really like it. I don't get it.
Yeah, I think when it comes to the viewer, though, there's different types of viewers. There's the ones that they're the ones that are going to read that review and hear the name, and they might not even know the work before they know the name, and they're already going to come into it. It's like watching a trailer for a movie. They make those trailers in 2 minutes like so amazing that you want to go see this movie, and then you see it. You sit there for 2 hours, and you're, what did I just watch? You know what I mean? So and then there's the viewers that are going to go into the work. Looking at go into a gallery, look at the work, and they're just not going to get it. You know what I mean? So, but there is that sort of, what do I want to say? This artist, oh my God, this artist, though, he's like the new thing, he's the greatest thing, and then that sort of does, you know, snowball into, I guess, I don't know, some sort of notoriety, I think.
Well, I'm sure that will be coming your way. You are a very talented artist, rebel.
Thank you, Lauren.
And I know I'm looking forward to your upcoming show. Do you know when that's going to be?
I'm shooting actually for maybe half a year. It just really depends. Right now I'm you know, finishing a piece, say a month or something like that. So, you know, who knows? I don't really know. It's hard to say. You know, who knows? I might stumble upon a painting that's going to take 3 months and it end up being next year or something. So I don't want to rush it.
I don't blame you, and it's something very exciting to look forward to, and I can't believe, Noah, we are out of time. You are fabulous. It's been such delight having you on the show. So wonderful. And I want to tell our listeners again where they can take a look at your artwork at www.emhert.com, emhurt.com, and on the website you can find Noah's email address to contact him. So, Noah, thank you so much for joining me today. You're fabulous.
Thank you, Lauren.
Please join me next time for another wild and a crazy journey in someone else's shoes. My guest will be Lauren Stevens. You got to love the name Lauren, founder of Right Wisdom and Provenance Press. And I have thoroughly enjoyed this lovely interview with Noah M. Hurt. And again, that website for Noah is mhurt.com. This is Lauren Leibowitz, and thank you for joining me and listening to How to Be Cool Shoes. I hope to see you next time, and I look forward to helping you find comfort in your own shoes. Bye-bye.